listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And I just want to say, you know, I'm watching this thing. It's played out over the weekend. Glenn Greenwald doing, you know, great reporting out of Hong Kong on a story that had been given to the Washington Post a month ago, over a month ago, by this employee of Bose, Alan Hamilton. And, you know, literally over a month ago, he gave it to them and they said, let's check with the government. We'll get back with you. Which, of course, immediately put the NSA spooks on his trail, thus off to Hong Kong he goes. Anyhow, I want my boring, predictable, and responsible career bureaucrats, government employees, back in charge of national security. You know, everybody's going all hysterical about, oh, this is the end of America, oh, this is national security stuff, blah, blah. I think there's, frankly, a bigger issue here. I want people who put in their 40 years as career government workers at a modest salary and retire with health care and a decent pension in charge of national security. People who are committed to a job and a career rather than being committed to a for-profit corporation, a quick buck, and a townhouse in Hawaii. People who are independent of administrations. They watch them come and go. Who are independent of politics, and who are independent of private interests. On Sunday, we learned the identity of the NSA leaker who provided The Guardian and The Washington Post with information regarding the most far-reaching surveillance programs known to the public. His name is Edward Snowden, and he's an employee of the defense contractor Booz Allen Hamilton. The company confirmed his employment in a press release yesterday afternoon. Which raises the question, what the hell is a defense? What the hell is a private company doing with all these secrets? There was once a time before Reagan put us on privatization steroids when our national security workers were civil service government employees and thus answerable to we the people. They had powers of surveillance, yes, and some, just like the fictitious James Bond, even had a license to kill. But they were public servants, beholden to our democratic institutions and subject to the scrutiny and oversight of both Congress and the courts. However, ever since Reagan, our political class has been obsessed with the idea that since government can't do anything right, private companies should take the reins over most of our commons, even in this case, the commons of our national security. And that's resulted in an entire industry of companies like Booz Allen Hamilton, where Snowden worked, reaping billions and billions in profits every year to operate, lobby for, and even protect in the press an ever-expanding and ever more profitable national security industry. Just think about this. This is from the New York Times today. Quote, Booz Allen earned $1.3 billion, 23% of the company's total revenue from intelligence work during its most recent fiscal year. End of quote. Its CEO, Ralph W. Schrader, took home $3.5 million in compensation in 2011. More than half of that coming from bonuses and other forms of non-salary compensation, and thus subject to very low Mitt Romney-level taxes. Booz Allen Hamilton, however, is just one part of a massive military-industrial security complex. In fact, according to Salon's Tim Shorrock, about 70% of our national intelligence budget is spent on the private sector. Shadowy corporations like NARUS, a subsection of Boeing, and Palantir Technologies have received lucrative contracts to develop and operate the technologies of the surveillance state. Palantir's data mining software is reportedly crucial to the NSA's PRISM program. And whistleblower Bill Binney told Tim Shorrock that, quote, they, NARUS, probably pick up 60-80% of the data going over the U.S. network, end quote. I mean, this I think, is the genuine outrage. Unlike government bureaucrats, these private companies and their CEOs, they don't answer to you or me. They answer to the profit motive and their shareholders. In comments to the New York Times, Stuart A. Baker, who worked as a general counsel to the NSA back in the 1990s, spoke of the danger of such a lack of democratic accountability. He wrote, quote, "Inside the government, there are structures designed to make sure that people understand that they can raise concerns about the lawfulness of particular activities in a variety of established channels. You can go to the Inspector General, you can go to the intelligence committees, and you don't have to pierce the veil of secrecy to get high-level attention to your concerns without exposing national secrets." As he noted, that's inside the government. But outside the government? Here's the next sentence of that paragraph of his testimony. "It's a little less obvious to employees at a contractor." In other words, for employees of companies like Booz Allen Hamilton, there's pressure not to do what's right, but to do what's profitable, to keep the government contract. Often that's the same thing, but as Snowden and Ellsberg and others have pointed out, sometimes it's not, and we shouldn't be taking the chance. Now, in their defense, the corporations that form the backbone of the surveillance state are doing exactly what corporations are supposed to do. They make money to boost dividends and shareholder profits and shareholder dividends. In this case, their profits just happen to be dependent on lobbying for more and larger invasive surveillance programs like PRISM, passing out millions to shareholders and CEOs, and paying low-level guys like Snowden, whose only degree was a GED high school equivalency test, which I should not be making fun of. I have one, too. But paying him a reported $200,000 a year and stationing him in a Hawaiian paradise. I mean, is that how a democratic republic is supposed to operate? Ideologues like Ronald Reagan, who supported outsourcing our national security, said that private corporations had the advantage over the government in every important way. They were more efficient. They were less expensive. They produced a higher quality product. But that's just a lie. We know that CEOs like Booz Allen Hammond's CEO Ralph Schrader are making tons of money. Even low-level tech workers like Edward Snowden are raking in way more than any government employee with a similar job. When you factor in the added pressure for shareholders' profits and new contracts, the idea of any sort of genuine greater efficiency in the private sector is laughable. If anything, there's an incentive not to be efficient, to keep the contract going as long as possible, to throw money at congressmen and lobbyists, to have lavish parties, to keep the bucks coming, and in the end, their product is an ever-expanding and unconstitutional snooping apparatus. The libertarian Reaganomics version of national security that is promoted by these guys is not keeping us any safer and is not any more efficient. In fact, it's the opposite. Private corporations are ultimately answerable only to profit, not to the law, not to we the people. And this increases the likelihood of abuses and eliminates oversights fundamental to democracy. It's time to drive a stake through the heart of the zombie of Reaganomics and put our national security back in the hands of government bureaucrats who make a middle-class paycheck, have good job security and a decent career path, and can be held accountable by you and me because they work for our government rather than a corporation, be it a corporation based in the U.S. or in some other nation. Our national security, the most essential part of our commons, must be wrestled out of the hands of this horde of for-profit companies that ring Washington, D.C., and put back into the hands of the governmental institutions that George Washington had three horses shot out from underneath him trying to create. Just like with privatization of our prisons, the privatization of our spy networks was a horrible mistake.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Please bring back my boring, competent, responsible government bureaucrats who used to run our national security. Then we'll be both safe and secure. Okay, remember back in the days of TV shows like, you know, My Three Sons and The Brady Bunch and Bewitched? I mean, there we go. Okay. Yeah, back in the 60s, when these shows were at the height of their popularity, national security was a really very different thing. I mean, first and foremost, setting aside the, you know, the Nixon abuses, intelligence agencies had to have a warrant for pretty much everything, and there were even restrictions for spying on other countries. During the Cold War, the U.S. government still needed to go through the proper channels and obtain the warrants necessary, even to spy on the Soviet Union. National security and spying were important, but so too was protecting our basic rights and liberties. Senator Obama would have fit in perfectly in the 1960s. I mean, during his time in the U.S. Senate, Senator Obama repeatedly stood up for our liberties and freedoms in the face of an ever-growing national security complex. As Senator Rand Paul pointed out in an op-ed for The Guardian last week, back in 2007, then-Senator Obama teamed up with then-Senator Chris Dodd, now a lobbyist, in threatening to filibuster the Foreign Intelligence Security Act, or FISA. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. At that time, Senator Obama opposed provisions in FISA that would have granted immunity to telecom companies who shared private client information with the government without proper due access. Back in 2007, Senator Obama's office released a statement saying that, quote, granting such immunity undermines the constitutional protections Americans trust the Congress to protect. Senator Obama supports a filibuster of this bill. End quote. And in 2008, during the presidential campaign, then-Senator Obama spoke out against the invasions of our Fourth Amendment privacy rights in the name of national security.
I will provide our intelligence and law enforcement agencies with the tools they need to track and take out the terrorists without undermining our Constitution and our freedom. That means no more illegal wiretapping of American citizens. No more national security letters to spy on citizens who are not suspected of a crime. No more tracking citizens who do nothing more than protest a misguided war. No more ignoring the law when it is inconvenient. That is not who we are. And it's not what is necessary to defeat the terrorists.
Right. Fast forward 5 years, and the now President Obama appears to be a shell of his former self. The man who once said that the intelligence community could do its job without trampling on the rights of American citizens now believes that, quote, modest encroachments on privacy, end quote, are just fine. Slowly but surely, President Obama has expanded national security during his time in office to a point where we're left asking just how much bigger can it get? By the way, this is bipartisan. This started with Bush. In fact, you could argue that this started with Nixon. I mean, but how out of control has our national security addiction become? Just in the name of saving fewer American lives than the number of people who slip and die in bathtubs every year. Yes, that's right. More people die in their bathtubs than are killed by terrorists in America every year. Now, 2001 might have been an exception with, you know, 3,000-4,000 people dying on 9/11, but if you average that over the decade, bathtubs are still a bigger threat. Connor Friedersdorf over at The Atlantic has put together a great piece talking about the powers that Bush and Obama are leaving to future presidents if we do nothing to change the system. And those powers are scary, very scary. I mean, his list is impressive and frightening. Things like a precedent that allows the president to kill citizens in secret without prior judicial or legislative review, indefinite detention without habeas corpus or due process, ethnic profiling to choose the targets of secret spying, collecting DNA from people who have been arrested but haven't been even convicted of a crime, and a torture program that could be restarted with one presidential signature. When it comes to indefinite detention, there's a section of the Patriot Act that allows for the indefinite detention of any illegal alien who the Attorney General of the United States believes may cause a terrorist act. And security agencies and police forces across the country are already using ethnic and racial profiling to single out possible terrorists or criminals. You know, look at New York. The NYPD has stopped and interrogated more than 4 million innocent people since 2002, according to the ACLU of New York, NYCLU. Meanwhile, last week, the Supreme Court upheld the police practice of taking DNA samples from people who had been arrested but not convicted of a crime. It's just 21st century version of fingerprinting.
Right.
What about some of the most egregious abuses of national security that have happened over the last decade? I mean, hundreds, maybe thousands of innocent civilians have been killed by U.S. drone attacks over the last 10 years without acknowledgement, apology, or compensation. In the fall of 2011, after a U.S. drone strike had killed American citizen Anwar al-Awlaki, U.S. officials then hunted down and killed his 16-year-old son and American citizen Abdul Rahman, even though he had no ties to terrorist organizations other than being the son of a radical jihadist. Closer to home, government officials have been abusing the powers granted to them by the Patriot Act on a startlingly frequent basis. In 2004, the Bushies, citing the Patriot Act, FBI agents use a GPS tracking device to search and secretly examine the home of Brandon Mayfield. Remember him? American citizen? Wrongfully jailed for 2 weeks on suspicion that he had something to do with the Madrid train bombings? He's like, huh? These are just a few of the many abuses that have occurred in the name of national security and protecting American lives. Thanks to the privatization of the national security state, which began with Reagan and has continued in every administration since, the Senator Obama, who stood up for civil liberties and freedoms in an age of increased national security interest, has been replaced by a President Obama who views modest intrusions on our privacy rights as just fine, even when they're done by for-profit companies answerable only to their stockholders. This is wrong. And this is that moment where we can say, this is wrong. Let's take national security out of the hands of private for-profit contractors, and let's go back to constitutional principles. The Fourth Amendment, it takes a warrant to snoop on you. The Fifth Amendment, you are innocent until proven guilty. The First Amendment, you can't assemble.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You can assemble to petition your government for redress of grievance, and you can speak out loud without fear of reprisal. Talk media for the sane among us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, it's like, okay, which, first of all, the so-called IRS scandal, I've been saying from day one, this is a non-event. And now Elijah Cummings is coming out going, not only is it a non-event, the guy who decided that any organization that had a word Tea Party in its name was probably political and not a social welfare organization, and therefore should be like, somebody should take a look at the application rather than rubber stamping it. That guy, that low-level functionary at the IRS, testified before Congress in closed session in front of Daryl Issa months ago and said, A, it was his idea, he put it into place, and B, he's a conservative registered as a Republican. It had nothing to do with politics. It had nothing to do with the White House. But Grand Theft Auto Daryl Issa thinks that if he repeats it often enough, people will start to believe it. Well, and he's right, by the way, in that regard. So, we've got all these scandals. Well, that's not a scandal. Well, what about this? The government is listening in on all your phone calls and well, not quite. I mean, I think it's pretty mind-boggling that they're sweeping up all this metadata, that they want to know who I called and when I called them and how long the phone call lasted and then who they called, and they can build this, call tree, and they can figure out who's connected to whom, and that they're getting the same stuff off Facebook and Google. And a lot of that's just public information because people put that stuff on Facebook. And some of it is not. And I think that we can all make a very strong argument that that's overreach, although it's overreach that has been authorized by Congress. But here's the, and therefore should be deauthorized by Congress, because it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, which says that you can't, that you can only violate the security of a person's home, papers, and effects with an order of a court that is the result of a judge signing a warrant, which is the result of somebody swearing under oath before that judge that they have reason to believe that there is probable cause that a crime has been, or that they have probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed. So, we need to do that. But the thing that I find most boggling is that national security has become an industry, that this kid, this whistleblower, worked for Booz Allen Hamilton. He didn't work for the CIA. I found it amazing that the headline in the New York Times today was former CIA employee rather than Booz Allen employee or defense contractor employee. It's like the media does not even want to point out the fact, although the Washington Post did a front page story about Booz Allen today to their credit, but of course that's the Washington Post. It's inside the Beltway. They're talking about it, you know, inside the Beltway company. But it's like, I don't think anybody else is talking about the fact that, you know, we have done with national security the exact same stupid Reaganomics, libertarian, Ayn Rand, idiotic thing that we did with prisons. Which is to say, yeah, the government can't do anything right, so let's turn it over to private corporations. They'll do it right. They'll be more efficient. And so what do we end up with? Private prisons that are hell holes. Private prisons that offer lousy food, terrible medical service. Private prisons that don't rehabilitate people. People come out more dangerous than they went in. Private prisons that operate at a profit with your tax dollars and mine. And where does that profit go? Does it go to for better service for the prisoners, better service for the community, aid for the victims of the crimes? No. It goes to the stockholders, the CEOs, and the senior executives of the private prison companies. Even the workers in the private prisons who sit in prison 8 hours a day are getting screwed in their paychecks. So we made a horrible mistake. We took the commons of the prisons and privatized it. And now we've made an equally, in fact, I'd say a far more horrible mistake by taking the commons of national security and privatizing it. I got no problem if the CIA wants to buy a computer system from IBM. I don't think the government should be, frankly, in the business of making computers. But running that computer, seeing the data on that computer, what is a 29-year-old kid working for a contractor in Hawaii making $200,000 a year without even a college degree? What is that kid doing with the ability to wiretap the President of the United States if he chose? With the knowledge of every single CIA station in the world? Working for a company that is not answerable to we the people, it's not answerable to, you know, to the extent that they keep their contract, I suppose they are, to the extent that they break the law, they are. But this kid's loyalty, frankly, was, in his mind, to the United States. It wasn't to Booz Allen. And I have to believe that had he worked for a government agency, had he worked for the CIA or the NSA, in this case it was on behalf of the NSA, if he'd worked for the NSA, he could have simply gone to the Inspector General's office, the NSA, and said, what we're doing is wrong. There's a mechanism inside these government agencies. There's no mechanism like that in private corporations. Or if there is, it doesn't work. Diane, in Niceville, Florida. Hey, Diane, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. I agree with you 100% about the contractors. They don't have loyalty, and they're likely to go job to job earning six figures looking for bigger six figures. And the second-ranking person, say, on an Air Force base might make, as a civilian, might make about $170,000, and that's at the highest. And that means they're probably about 50 to 60 years old. And I find it appallable that this young man who has no loyalty at 29 making $200,000. And I am retired Air Force civilian, and I did an IG report. I did it anonymously, and they did investigate within 2 weeks. As a matter of fact, I was one of the people of the witnesses they called. And I did not have to divulge that. I was the one that initiated that IG complaint.
IG being Inspector General.
Right. And they followed through, and they corrected the action, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. But you were an employee of the federal government, not of
right,
a private corporation.
Right, by the federal government. Contractors are going to be the demise because as a federal employee, as my husband still is, we have loyalty to our country, of course, but also to our retirement. We're looking at working 30, 40 years, and if we go running to the newspaper, we're out of a retirement.
Yeah.
There is a fix within the system. I retired with 25 years of service 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And my husband, he's still working. He's going to die on the job. but it works. The employees, the actual government employees, have a system to correct everything inside. Yep. It won't make it to the newspapers, but it does get corrected.
And this is what I'm saying. I want my boring bureaucrats back, right? My nice people. No offense, Diane. I don't mean to say you're boring, but people who like you know, my dad put in 40 years and retired. He wasn't a government worker. He was a tool and die, you know, worked in a tool and die shop. But it was like, we're here for the duration, so we're going to do the best job we can. And we're going to do it right. And it's not about climbing the corporate ladder. And it's not about going from a $200,000 job to a $400,000 job. It's not about, you know, pumping more money for, you know, on behalf of the contractor by throwing a, you know, a $500,000 party for some senator. It's about just doing the damn job. Diane, very well said. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Myron in Sharon, Pennsylvania. Hey, Myron.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
You were in the business of spying?
Yes, I was. Back in the 60s, actually, very early, 1960, when I went out in the field, if we were told if we spied on an American, we would end up in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas prison.
You worked for the CIA? You worked for the CIA?
No, I worked for the service.
For military intelligence. Okay. But yeah. Same thing. It wasn't the FBI, because my understanding is back then the FBI had the domestic portfolio, as it were, and the CIA and the military had the international portfolio. So you worked for the military, and you were told if you spied on an American civilian, you could go to Fort Leavenworth prison.
Well, you would. No ands, if buts about it.
Uh huh.
You were not allowed to. You weren't allowed to spy on an American.
Yeah.
And to give you an idea, I made a whole $78 and less than $200 a month.
Wow. Of course, back in 1960, $200 a month would be like about $2,500 a month now. I mean, that would be, what, around a $30,000, $40,000 a year salary in today's money, do you think? Middle-class salary?
Yeah, middle-class.
Yeah.
And then what I had to laugh about is when I get out of the service, I get mail from the CIA and the NSA, both offer me a job.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. Uh-huh. I was just a shy of 21 when this happened. And I didn't take the jobs because I had a problem and I didn't want to take a chance of giving away a secret with my alcohol problem.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't join. But I'm glad today that I didn't join. Because I couldn't put up with what's going on today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and increasingly today, it wouldn't be the NSA or the CIA sending a letter to a former military intelligence guy like you. It would be, who's Alan Hamilton? It would be one of these defense contractors saying, hey, want to make $200,000 a year? Or you actually have a high school diploma? Want to make $400,000 a year? I mean, it's just incredible. Myron, thank you for calling in and sharing your story with us. This is why I'm saying, I want my bureaucrats back. Give me the good old-fashioned, boring government workers who do their job and care about it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Somebody wants to be in the for-profit business, let them make cars. You know, let them make rocket ships. I don't care, but spy? No. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Wayne in Chicago is in WCPTA. Wayne, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Wayne.
I'm watching Bloomberg right now, and they're talking about the same thing you're talking about with the surveillance. This is for all the people who are saying that Mr. Snowden, I think his name is, he did this money. This guy is a United States citizen, born in the United States. The courage that it took for him to, he's basically given up his life. The only thing he knows, he's only 29 years old.
He's going to be the next Bradley Manning.
Yeah. This guy's given up his whole life knowing that he may never see his country again. And if he does see his country, he'll be inside of a jail cell most likely. So he's a total hero. He has total courage. But what I want to talk about is the Washington Post report that came out Friday the career intelligence officer that they talked to. He's the one who first said that the companies like Facebook, Apple, that they gave the government direct access to their internet firm servers.
Mm-hmm.
The Apple spokesman, Steve Dowling, coming out saying, we give no government access to our servers. We never heard of the program PRISM, which is the program they're using.
Right.
You got Facebook chief security officer saying, no access to government organizations. So all of them are just lying through their teeth.
Either that, or the government is simply accessing that information on Facebook the same way you and I would.
Okay.
I mean, it's not all that hard, right? You just go in, and maybe they've got an administrator password of some kind that they hacked out of the system, so they can look at, you know, even private Facebook accounts, and they just see who's friends with whom and what are they saying and, you know, what's going on, and you know, they probably can do that without a warrant.
If the government tries to hack into their systems, they're going to know somebody's hacking into their system.
Well, I'm not talking about hacking the systems. I'm talking about just reading. You can, I mean, it's astounding. Employers today are going onto Facebook of potential employees and looking at their drunken pictures when they were, you know, half naked and passed out with a beer in their hand back 5 years before in college and going, maybe not. Right? I mean, this is the big new panic of young people who have, you know, the Facebook generation, who have been putting stuff up on Facebook since they were 12 years old, and now they're in their early 20s and they're looking for jobs and they're going, well, wait a minute. Maybe when I was 13, I didn't represent myself all that well. And the government can read that just as easily as an employer can. So,
okay.
You know, you probably are right, Wayne, that somebody's lying, whether it's the government or whether it's the individual corporations, or that the government has some kind of a backdoor. I mean, there's been charges for years and years that, for example, Microsoft built a backdoor into all their software. Although that doesn't mean that Apple has a backdoor in their corporate software or Facebook or whatever. I mean, who knows? Who knows? But the point that all of this is possible should give us all pause for thought. I mean, there was an op-ed over the weekend over on Alternet about how, you know, Foucault, I think it's how it's pronounced, F-A-U-C-A-L-T, the French author and philosopher and mathematician. And how he suggested that the government knowing what you were doing, continuously observing you, could, in a, what he called a soft tyranny, they don't use that information because if you know that you're constantly being watched, you alter your behavior in subtle ways. So we basically just become a nation of sheep. And people don't go into areas of intellectual or political inquiry that they might have otherwise gone. And people don't investigate things or question things or ask the questions that need to be answered because they know that they're being watched. And that, you know, the damage then is already done. It doesn't even take a police state at that point. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, Tom, what they want is total information awareness.
Yeah, that was the original name of the program.
Say that again?
That was the original name of the program when it was put together under Bush.
Oh, they want to know what you're doing, where you are, every moment of the day. And I just have one last thing to say. All you young people like 18 to 40 years old, what you better do is declare yourselves independent, form your own block, or else you're doomed. That's all I got to say.
Block, what do you mean?
Form their own independent voting bloc.
Oh, I see.
The Democrats and the Republicans do nothing but serve themselves. Yeah. They do not serve the people. All these young people, because me and you are going to be gone, Tom. They'll still be here.
Yeah.
So I say these people, 18 to 40 years old, form your own independent voting bloc. Declare yourselves independent. And
but Wayne, that, you know, how did that work out for John Anderson?
Well, what I'm saying is all the voting population of the country does it, it will work out.
Well, John Anderson pulled a lot of young people in. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that campaign. There were a number of good insurgencies. I would say, you know, young people 18 to 40 take over the Democratic Party. But you and I both know the power of money on both these political parties is so great. And so first, I would say to people 18 to 40, join MoveOn.org or Common Cause or one of the other groups that are working to overturn Citizens United and end this dual doctrine of money is speech and corporations are people, so that it will then be possible to have an incorruptible or a less corruptible government, and then we can, you know, get something done. But, you know, I think we've got to... Go ahead. Oh, you just said thanks. Okay. Yeah, I think we've got to go back to the original sin. The original sin is with the Supreme Court. It started in the mid-19th century, in the 1880s, and it reached its pinnacle, its apotheosis, however you say that word, its peak. It reached that in 2010 with Citizens United. And that is this doctrine that was made up by the nine members of our constitutional monarchy, the nine royal lords of America, kings and queens of America. The money is speech and the corporations are persons. No legislature has ever said that. And the consequence of that is that now that the people with the money, the big corporations, they're even doing our spying.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Meanwhile, in the rest of the country, yes, we will get back to this whole spying thing. But there's also, and how I, you know, I want my bureaucrats back, please. Thank you very much. There's also quite a contest going on all across the country in various school districts, some that are kind of popping to the surface right now in Ohio, where creationists are saying to school boards, you should have your students learn this stuff as well as, or in addition to, or as a counterpoint to, or whatever, the theory of evolution and the idea that the world is 5 billion years old and the universe is 15 billion years old and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not sure how that's going to help those students, you know, be competitive in the world and get into college and anything else. I'm guessing if they want to become ministers or evangelists, it might. Dr. Joseph Mastropaolo is with us. Am I saying that right, sir?
Mastropaolo.
And a PhD in kinesiology and taught biomechanics and physiology at California University for 25 years. The website, Joseph Mastro, M-A-S-T-R-O-Paolo, P-A-O-L-O, .com is the website. There's a link to it at tomhartman.com, too, if you weren't writing that fast. And what is your definition of creationism?
Well, first of all, I think I should reveal to you that I'm not a creationist. I'm what I would call a classical scientist. And so what that means is that I would go according to the rules of classical science, and that's what I would advise any school board to do. Now, if you're an evolutionist, whether you realize it or not, you're in favor of censorship, because evolution was revealed as a superstition 340 years ago, and subsequently 160 years ago, that was confirmed by Louis Pasteur and John Tyndall.
So how is it that I can go into the hospital now and catch a strain of strep, methicillin-resistant strep, that has evolved a resistance to methicillin, the most potent antibiotic? How is it that there are strains of gonorrhea out there that are resistant to antibiotic? How is it that the bacteria that causes tuberculosis has evolved a defense against many of the antibiotics that have historically been used against them, if there is no such thing as evolution?
There's no such thing as evolution of any of those strains of organisms that you mentioned.
So God created them all just to make life miserable for us?
No, hold on. What you have to realize is that every organism, that includes human beings, will have a bell curve of susceptibility to any kind of factor that is going to cause mortality or morbidity.
Sure, it's why some of us survived the Black Plague and some of us didn't.
Well, some of the Black Plague, incidentally, those organisms, some of them, expired very quickly. Others, most of them, didn't. And then there were some that even if you put in the most advanced antibiotics, would still take an enormous amount of time to kill. So you have this wide range of susceptibility for any kind of organism.
But you're describing evolution. What you're describing is that bell curve of capabilities you could also describe as a bell curve of mutations or genetic variability. And when a species is confronted with a new environment, those groups on that curve, and they may be in the 1% slice of the curve or the 40% slice of the curve, but those groups in that curve that are adapted to those new conditions are the ones who survive, and the rest of them get wiped out. And now, looking at it years later, you got a whole brand new, quote, species. That's evolution, what you just described.
No, that is not evolution. What that is the bell curve of survivability for any kind of organism. And what you have done with your antibiotic is you've wiped out the easily killed portion of that bell curve.
Right, and millions of years ago, those...
What you have left over are the ones that are highly resistant. And the result of that is that it's the highly resistant ones that propagate and reproduce, and pretty soon what you have is what is called a superbug.
Right.
But
so,
only because you've wiped out the one.
So, if you go back,
easily killed.
If you go back, roughly a billion years, maybe 600-700 million years, and you find the very earliest multicellular organisms, you find that some of them had an individual cell that made them more that had chemicals in it that made them sensitive to light. And they were able to more accurately orient themselves to the sun and use photosynthesis to, you know, to make more stuff. And as these things got more and more complex, again, being weeded out by the exact same process you're describing, those who couldn't orient themselves to the sun died out, or if there were predators around, got eaten. And as they continued to diversify, to avoid a word you probably don't like, mutate. Or have, you know, variability. As they continue to get more and more complex, eventually we ended up with eyeballs. I mean, over time.
That's a nice story, but there is no evidence to back it up.
So there is.
What you have are organisms coming into being with their eyeballs already in operation. And so what you have...
There's a whole spectrum of visual response, a visual response from literally from the plant kingdom through the animal kingdom.
Well, I've done experiments with plants as well. I've investigated for Microsterius, which is a one-cell plant, how many of them are duplicates. If you're going to be an evolutionist, you got to have to realize that you're going to have to make duplicates with only one advantage with each organism. And there were no duplicates. Every one was an original. Now, please tell me what it is throughout the universe, and this is incidentally throughout the universe, living and non-living things combined. There is not one thing in nature that is identical to another. Now, who did that? Was it Santa Claus's elves? Was it leprechauns? Was it the green men from Mars?
Was it natural law?
Hey?
Was it natural law?
Natural law?
Sure.
Well, how does natural law
work? I'm with Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson on this.
Every grain of sand has to be an original.
Sure.
How does natural law operate like that?
How does it not operate like that?
Natural law that permits that.
How does it not operate like that? So, we are splitting hairs here. You want this taught to children in school, when the majority of scientists would, not just disagree with you, but strongly disagree with you. How does that help our children?
Well, the way that it helps our children is it tells them that you don't teach things and you don't believe things unless you have experiments that back them up. And when you do the experiments, what you find is not evolution, you find devolution. Everything wears out.
You're talking about entropy.
Everything disintegrates. Everything approaches disappearance. You find nothing in the opposite direction.
Well, no. You're describing entropy, and I would say that, you know, if you want to just apply that to a human being, anybody over 20 is starting to experience entropy, but anybody who's 5 years old is in the reverse of entropy.
Well, do you realize that the genetic disorders in the human genome are increasing exponentially?
Sure, and so are the toxins that we're exposed to in our environment. But again, we're in the way. Dr. Joseph Moss. Mastropaolo, thank you. And the link is over at TomHartman.com. Thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, so do we start teaching creationism in our school? I don't have a problem with teaching creationism as long as it's in the comparative religion class. By the way, the Director of Intelligence, James Clapper, used to work for Booz Allen Hamilton. Can anybody spell revolving door? Yeah. Here's, by the way, this was under oath, and this is Mr. Clapper speaking to Senator Ron Wyden, who has been, raising some serious questions lately. He's a little upset about what's going on here, and hopefully this will play off my computer. Maybe it won't. Looks like things are running kind of slow. Okay, we will not even try it. Anyhow, he said, so Wyden, so what I wanted to see is if you could give me a yes or no answer to the question, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? Clapper, no, sir. Wyden, it does not. Clapper, not wittingly. There are cases where they could inadvertently perhaps collect, but not wittingly. So that's interesting. I wonder if what he actually meant was the government's not getting this information. Booz Allen Hamilton is. They give it to us, but we're not out there getting it. We hire contractors. I mean, we played that game in Iraq with Blackwater. Oh, we're not killing those civilians. That's, that rogue company. We're not building, defective facilities that electrocute soldiers. No, that was Dick Cheney's company. KBR or, Halliburton or something. Anyway. John, you wanted to comment on evolution. John in Cayucos, California. You're on the air, John.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I was hoping that guy would actually take more of a religious spin on things, because I've been thinking about this for a while now, since I think you last had someone on about creationism. But I think I have a solution for everybody to just calm down. The only people that may not like this are the atheists, but it doesn't matter what God you believe in, but can't we all just agree that God created evolution?
Well, that's more or less the official position of the Catholic Church these days. I mean, that was, when they recently apologized to Galileo and to all these other guys, that they put out a statement that basically said, we think that God created the universe and that evolution is part of that process.
Yeah, it has to be when you think about it, because if we were thrown in our current shape and form into a world where the cavemen lived, we would die.
Yeah.
There's no way. We wouldn't have the skills. We develop these skills that move us along the path of history, Right. And if you're thrown in, that's why babies need parents.
Yep.
They teach you things. You're just not thrown in.
And not just parents, an entire culture, an entire society.
Yeah, a culture is a parent, really.
Yeah, To paraphrase Hillary Clinton, it takes a village. Yeah, excellent. Excellent point. John, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Catherine in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Catherine. Top Secret
Hi.
America?
Yeah, I'm online. You know, I'm a little puzzled by what he did and why he did it, because between 2008 and 2010, the Washington Post did an investigative report.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it online. It's called Top Secret America.
Right.
And the vast majority of what he was talking about, I think, is on this.
Hmm.
And I think people should go look at it. You just Google Top Secret America, Washington Post. And there's 20% of the people who have high security clearance or called super clearance, and some of those talk to the Washington Post. Now, this just came up because when all this was happening, somebody reposted it on Facebook, and I've been reading the page.
Hmm. Okay.
It's absolutely fascinating. You can put in, of course, it's 2010 stats, but you can put in your zip code and find out how many fusion centers and Homeland Security centers you have in your neighborhood or your city.
Yikes.
There's a whole list of the corporations. There's a whole chart, a pie wheel, a colored pie wheel of who's working for the government on these secret projects.
Yeah. Amazing.
You know, it's absolutely fascinating. So take a look at it, and I hope you post it on your website.
Amazing. Okay, I will check that out. Catherine, thank you very much for the heads up. Top Secret America. You said it was the Washington Post?
Yeah, just Google Washington Post, Top Secret America, and
okay.
You get the full
Got
the whole enchilada.
Cool. Thank you very much. Mark in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yes, that gentleman you were talking to regarding evolution, you know, it just astounds me that there's no way to explain variation within a species even without random mutation driven by radiation in our environment, and then selection pressure pushes us constantly.
Right, and that's the process called evolution, which he was agreeing with me about, I thought, except he won't call it that.
Well, he doesn't take it farther. You know, they can't say, ooh, well, this could result in a new species. But
right.
If it didn't, and you realize how old the Earth is, then over time, how do you explain the proliferation of species? You know,
right.
You start out with a few, and now you have all this wonderful diversity that
right.
Darwin talked about.
Yeah, although I think that,
to this day.
Yeah, and I think that Stephen Jay Gould took it a step further. You know, with his bottleneck, basically, hypothesis that
right.
punctuated equilibrium, punctuated evolution,
right.
whatever he called it, evolution happens really, really fast when there's a major stressor in the environment that kills off large portions of the population, and only those who can adapt are the ones who survive. And, you know, which contradicted Darwin's slow and gradual theory. But I think that, you know, between the two of them, they have it nailed, and it's just... I think it's crazy that we would be teaching our kids that they need to be, you know, that science needs to be biblically based. I mean, in religion class, you can say that, okay, here's a religious basis for the Bible. You know, back in the day, we shouldn't eat pork because there was this thing called trichinomiasis. But just to deny evolution, I mean, Mark, thanks for the call. It's somewhere between mind-boggling and sad.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And what's most amazing is this is going to be another one of those wedge issues that know-nothing Republicans are going to use to try to win local school board elections and thus rise up the political. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, defending America from the weapons of mass deception and exposing the con and conservative at the same time. Oh, are we having fun? We're having more fun than... Yeah. Actually, that was Will Rogers' thing. I'll Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Oh, Bob.
Appreciate you.
Back at you.
Yeah, I'm hanging in here, and I mean barely. I wanted to say something, and I want to be kind of specific and then kind of bubble up, and you stop me. What you're saying about soft tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
Over the generations, this is what has created the soft corporate what I call fascism that exists in our society today from what used to be considered liberals. Joe Bajant refers to these people in his book on the class wars, Deer Hunting with Jesus.
Yeah. Well, Chris Hedges in his book, The Death of the Liberal Class, also.
Yeah. And so from these people who, like, you know, people a few years older than me, I'm about to be 54. I'm running into people that are real conservative, not very informed, to people who are very intelligent. And they're all kind of gravitating in the middle in this kind of corporate fascist fear wagon.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of how that percolates here in this neck of the woods in eastern Oklahoma. We have a lot of pretty country. We have a lot of pretty lakes and streams, and people fish, and people eat the fish. Well, now we've been warned, you know, that our fish are polluted and with mercury.
Yep.
We've known this for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to the evolution versus creationism, I don't know, 16 years ago, I called up the head of the biology department at our university here in this town, Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and northeastern Oklahoma State University, and complained because they were sticking this disclaimer on their science books that the right wing insisted that they stick on there.
You're kidding.
And I said, what's the deal? And he said, well, I'm a member of the Rotary Club here in town. What can I say? You know, it's
yeah. Yeah. Bob, I'm losing you. In fact, you vanished. At first I thought it was maybe caller ID, but I think I've lost Bob. But Bob, good point. And this is the soft tyranny. It's like, you know, the old phrase is the soft tyranny of low expectations, but I'm concerned about the soft tyranny of how people alter their behavior in subtle ways when they believe they're being watched, even if they're not being watched. We should not be believing that we're being watched in everything we do, everything we say. End of that rant. Deepak, listening to WCPT in Chicago. Hey, Deepak, what's up? Deepak? No? Hopefully we don't have a phone problem here. Let's try one more. Cindy in Euclid, Ohio. Hey, Cindy, can you hear me? Our phones have croaked? Oh, very interesting. Okay. Well, we lost the whole thing. Well, welcome to the wonderful world of Verizon. Okay. In that case, since I can't put calls on the air for the moment, let me just close this call screening software here while you guys reboot on. You're going to reboot the systems and things, but you're going to have to wait for the internet to come back up. But, you know, while we're doing that, let me go back and amplify on this a little bit. Okay, I'm showing that the webcam came back up. Yeah, that it's back up. So let me just tell me when to reopen the software. There was this, it's just a remarkable piece over in Think Progress yesterday that got me thinking about this, and I think it was Zach Bocamp wrote it. And he was referring to Foucault, F-A-U-C-A-U-L-T. I remember reading Umberto Eco's Foucault's Pendulum back, you know, a decade and a half ago, but I've never really read Foucault, if I'm pronouncing his name right, or Foucault, or however, it's French, I mean, however you say that. But his hypothesis was that you don't actually have to be a tyranny. You don't actually have to crush people. All you have to do is let them know that you can and have them believe that you're watching them all the time. And they will alter their behavior. Now, I mean, in some cases, that might be a good thing. If stalkers or rapists or people who are, Sue says it's pronounced Foucault. Oh, that makes sense. Foucault. Foucault's been, yeah. Thank you, Sue. We get the smartest people in the world in the internet and in the chat room, and Sue Nethercutt is right at the top of the list. Not just for our chat room, but just the smartest people in the world. Period. So, Foucault's hypothesis was that, you know, people will change their behavior, and if people change their behavior, then they're less likely to be doing the things that are outside the norm that produce social change. You may not like the change, and historically conservatives would not like that change, but that produce social change, that provide for diversity, intellectual diversity, spiritual diversity, cultural diversity, educational diversity. And like I was saying, I mean, it may cause somebody who's off in search of child porn to think twice before they go on the web, and you could argue that that's a good thing, but do you really want it to be causing somebody who's might otherwise want to read a page by the Occupy movement to think twice? Do you want somebody, I mean, it's interesting. I was just going through news articles this morning about the NSA and the whole whistleblower thing, and it suddenly hit me, you know, I've just hit like 20 or 30 different websites that have the NSA in them. I wonder if I just popped up on somebody's screen. Now, I could argue, hey, I'm a talk show host. This is what I do for a living. There's no, you know, I'm not a terrorist. I live my life fairly publicly. But you might not be able to argue that. And how are you going to change your behavior? So, anyhow. Paul, now that our phones are back. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Great show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money about corporations taking over the government. In fact, I want to throw out an idea I've been thinking about for a while,
mm-hmm.
and that is the real big brother in this country is not the government. The government's just a tool they use, but it's really corporations. And a perfect example of that, proof of that, was when Bush and the Republicans looked the other way before 9/11 so that we would be attacked, and they could use that as an excuse to invade Afghanistan and Iraq. And who are the big beneficiaries of that? Exxon, Mobil, Blackwater, General Electric. I mean, the list goes on and on.
So whether whether one accepts your premise that they look the other way, I think my personal take is that they knew something was horrible was going to happen, and that Bush should have done like Bill Clinton did. You know, issued a national security alert, asked everybody to start talking to each other, figured out what was going on because we did have that information, and he failed to.
Yeah,
I think he failed too because he was just, you know, dumber than dog do. You probably think he failed too because he was looking for an excuse. And there's actually evidence to back up your point of view if you go back and look at PNAC, you know, what they said in 1998, that we need a Pearl Harbor event to bring this about. I can't. Maybe it's some kind of, you know, psychological softness or something. I just can't take myself there. But
we know he was already planning to invade Iraq.
Oh, we know that. Yeah, from day one, right? And he was looking for an excuse, and perhaps he thought this was it. I don't know. But in any case, your larger point that the real big brothers are the corporations. I would say the corporations and a small number of rather toxic billionaires. I don't think most billionaires are all that toxic, but there's a small number of very toxic ones here in the United States who have dedicated their lives to corrupting our government and building a society of, by, and for the billionaires and the multimillionaires, and will stand on the heads of everybody else, all the rest of us. And I'm with you on that, Paul. Thanks a lot for the call. Deepak in Chicago. You want to try that again?
Yeah. Hey, Tom, can you hear me?
I do. It's working.
Okay. Yeah, I caught the last part of your conversation with I'm not sure whether you're a scientist or microbiologist about bacterial evolution. And I think from what I picked up, his whole debate was that this is not evolution taking place, but something to do with normal distribution along the bell curve. Am I right?
Yeah, he was arguing natural selection. And by the way, he's a kinesiologist.
Right. So that discounts his whole scientific credentials. But anyway, I'm an infectious disease physician. I've been doing so 15 years. I work in the Chicago area. I'm probably the only liberal in Northwest Indiana where I work. But coming back to the point, I totally disagree. And most of the scientific literature, you know, whether you're reading Darwin, Dawkins, or, you know, Stephen Golding, you know, it's actually bacterial resistance that we see nowadays in the hospital, including MRSA, which you brought up. This is a classic example of not just, you know, bacterial evolution over time, but I hear a break coming on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you can finish your sentence, Deepak.
Yeah, but this is basically an example of actual natural selection in progress. Because, you know, right now what we're seeing is almost like an exponential rise in resistance.
Yep.
As a response to overuse of antibiotics.
Yes. And now we're out of time, but thank you very much. You said it very well, and thank you for validating my hypothesis. I appreciate the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. I just want my bureaucrats back. We need to make that a mantra. Let's get these for-profit corporations out of the security spy business. Hey, let's check out what's going on with the Talk Radio News Service today, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person you helped. In fact, Ellen's going to be over to South Sudan next week taking pictures of goats and slaves. And so, cool stuff. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria. Always nice to see your smiling face. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Oh, plenty today.
I can imagine.
The House of Representatives, or at least House members, not clear how many of them, are going to hear from top officials from the Justice Department, the FBI, and the National Security Agency tomorrow. Deputy Attorney General James Cole, Deputy Director of the FBI Sean Joyce, and NSA Deputy Director Chris Inglis and Robert Litch, who's General Counsel of the Office of the DNI, are all going to speak to House members in the wake of the reports that the NSA is collecting massive amounts of cell phone and internet data.
So do you think that the essence of these hearings is going to be, okay, NSA, what are you guys up to? Or is it going to be, okay, NSA, when are you going to throw this bum in jail who outed this thing?
I think it's going to be a combination of the two.
I see.
I think they're going to want to know what's happening with the investigation from the DOJ and maybe from the NSA, because the Daily Beast has a very interesting article about how the top secret Q group, which is the Associate Directorate for Security and Counterintelligence, which is the NSA's police, have been after him for some time. They've suspected him for some time.
I read that story, and what struck me that was missing from that story was the fact that Edward, what's his last name?
Snowden,
thank you. That Edward Snowden had taken this information to the Washington Post back in May and said, would you publish this? And they said, let's check with the government first. And I'm guessing that was the point at which the Q group went, you know, the Washington Post went to the government and said, is this true? And the Q group went, what? And started looking for him. And that was completely missing from an article in the
paper. Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian is disputing some of the timeline that the Post reporter has been putting out there as to how things went down.
That's interesting.
There's a dispute between the two reporters in the story.
Is Greenwald saying that the Post had it longer or shorter?
Shorter.
Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Also today, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney sidestepped questions about whether President Obama was correct when he insisted that all members of Congress have been briefed, because members are saying that they haven't been. So hopefully they will be by tomorrow. Also, the inventor of the World Wide Web, and of course that's disputed on who that is, calling on the public to protest the NSA's recently revealed surveillance program. Tim Berners-Lee said in a statement to the Financial Times that unwarranted government surveillance is an intrusion on basic human rights that threatens the very foundations of a democratic society.
Wouldn't that, to a certain extent, be true of unwarranted corporate intrusion as well? Although corporations, I suppose, don't have the power to imprison you the way the government does.
That I think seems to be what people are coming down as saying the difference. It's like I go to a shoe website, look at some shoes, then I'll go to Politico and suddenly the shoe's showing up on the sidebar.
Right.
That's different from having the NSA come to my house.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
So that seems to be the difference. So there are other developments. I mean, there's a development a minute, and I could just spend all day telling you the developments. There are other things going on.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration reform in the Senate is being debated, and there's an important procedural vote tomorrow where we'll find out for the first time whether they have 60 votes for immigration reform or not.
What's your sense of it?
My sense is that they do have 60 votes.
Yeah, or they wouldn't have taken it this far.
Right.
And we have five Republicans now who've come out and said that they're in favor of it, which means probably the conservative Dems are going to go along with it, too.
Yeah, and it's not clear whether they've got all of the Democrats on board. It's not clear whether they do have them. There are a lot of interesting questions about which Republicans are coming on. We know that Kelly Ayotte has joined in, which isn't entirely surprising.
Yeah.
But, there are a lot of questions of who they're going to get. One interesting question is Rand Paul. Which way is he going to jump? If he can get some of the language toughened on border security, he might come on board.
Well, I thought as a libertarian, he thought there shouldn't be any borders, that anybody should be able to go anywhere.
Libertarian.
No, I'm serious.
Well, he is also wanting some tough border security.
So he says he's a libertarian, but probably one of the core libertarian principles, which is, labor should be free to contract with employers anywhere under any circumstances, he is not respecting. He's going with the right wing Republicans.
I think he's libertarian, some of the time.
When it's convenient. Yeah, I got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's going to be interesting. Also today, President Obama marked the 50th anniversary of the Equal Pay Act. Noted progress has been made, but more work has to be done. He said, this is the 21st century. It's time to close the gap.
Yep.
He also said the increasing number of female breadwinners in the workforce is not something to panic about or be afraid about.
No, I think it's a good thing, actually. I mean, it's not a good thing to the extent that it's driven by economic necessity or families breaking up, that kind of thing. But men have been running this world way too long, and they've screwed it up way too badly.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. I think it's true.
And the Supreme Court today let stand a court order barring abortion protesters from displaying images of aborted fetuses in places where they might disturb children.
So they're defining this as porn?
That's the interesting thing. They seem to be, and yet, they struck down a California law that banned the sale of violent video games to minors.
That's not a public display. That's a private display.
Right. It is a private display. But, yeah, they did.
Or is it just that they have a separate standard for in front of their own building?
No, this involves a church, too.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Sounds very interesting. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. I learn something from you every day. Thank you so much for dropping by, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. And brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. We will be back. In just a moment here, Debbie Hines is going to be with us, a trial lawyer on the George Zimmerman trial.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in addition to, all this national security stuff going on, and they're trying to teach creationism in the Ohio schools, and the culture wars are beginning, all that stuff. In addition to that, today is the first day of the trial of George Zimmerman for the murder of Trayvon Martin. And this following a week or so of George Zimmerman's lawyer dumping in, apparently his law team, dumping into the media a bunch of information that, in my opinion, was designed to pollute the jury pool. Let's check in with Debbie Hines, trial lawyer, former prosecutor, and a legal political commentator over at LegalSpeaks.com, her website. And, Debbie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. So what's happening, actually, even before we get to what's happening today, what's the status of all, of this dump on Trayvon dump that went on over the last week or so that I believe you and I talked about the last time?
Right. Yeah, we did. I mean, all the defense, instead of the defense mounting what they said they were going to mount, which was a defense on stand your ground and self-defense, what they're doing is they're looking like they're trying to try Trayvon Martin, the victim.
They're basically saying he deserved it because he was not a good guy.
Exactly. instead of working on their own issues.
That's
they're
amazing.
Just basically trying to inflame the jury.
In fact, it seemed to me like they're saying he deserved it because he was African American, or he deserved it because he was part of a culture that, you know, or culture, that's the wrong phrase even, that he wasn't a good enough person, and
right.
He was African American.
Exactly. I mean, and that's how the whole case started, with racial profiling.
Right.
And they've just carried, unfortunately, they just carried that theme throughout up to the first day of the trial.
Right. So today, the first day of the trial, what happened?
Well, it's going to be a long haul before anything interesting happens with respect to the media, because they have a jury pool of 500 persons, which is, you know, to put it in perspective, that's actually 10 times the average number of jurors that are called in on a second-degree murder case.
500?
500.
So they have to get to a jury of 12, right, for a capital case?
They have to get, in Florida law, it's a jury of 6 under this case. Normally it is 12, yes.
Oh, okay.
But
so it's
Florida,
oh, because it's this 6. Is not, they're, he's not being tried for first-degree murder. He's being tried for second-degree.
He's being tried for second-degree murder, and it's just under the Florida statute. It's 6. It's right. 12 in other places.
I see.
So, and they're trying to get 6 plus 4. I think she was going to go with 4 alternates. So what it really means that they have to try to get, and they may not have to talk to all 500 people, but what they need to get is somewhere around 30, a little over 30, what we call qualified jurors, that they, you know, qualified
right.
prospective jurors,
right.
because each side has anywhere from 6 to 10 strikes that they can use for any reason.
Now, isn't there also a fairly large filter? I know, for example, I was called up for jury duty when I was in Portland once. And I sent him back a note saying, you know, I'd be pleased to serve on a jury if I'm only off a day or two. But if not, can you please move me back to the summer, because we were in ratings period and I just can't take that time off the radio. This is my job. And,
right.
And, you know, and they were very nice. They said, no, this trial will probably last at least a week and you know, we'll reschedule you for the summer. You know, isn't that going to be the first big hurdle, is just finding people who can spend 4 weeks, you know, without losing their jobs or their income?
Right. That's why they've done 500. Now, it's not, they haven't done 500 because of the 4 weeks, because, I mean, you know, like, there are judges that actually have to serve on juries, and there are, unfortunately, people that are self-employed that don't have any income that have to serve on juries. But so that's not always a good enough reason that I won't get paid. I mean, I've seen
right.
people, we have to use a strike to get them off, because that's not a reason that the judge will excuse you.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe in Oregon they just give you one chance to use that card.
They were just nice.
I guess. I mean, you know. So, actually, there was on the form, in fact, there was a place where you could request, you know, up to a 6-month delay, I think it was, and that's what I requested.
Right, you can do
yeah.
that. I mean, you can do that in this area too. You can request that I can't sit at this time, but I'm okay with being coming back and being called back.
Right, right, which is what I said. So, but in any case, so what are the criteria? What are the challenges that both the defense and the prosecution have right now in this jury selection process?
Well, what's really going to happen is what happens in all juror cases. They have in this case, because it's a large case and it's a well-known case, they have a jury questionnaire. I'm not sure how many questions, but each side plus a judge were able to have an input on what questions the jurors would have to fill out. And it'll have all the normal questions that kind of sort of wean out people that are pro-prosecution or pro-defense or pro-police or hate police or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the jurors will be what we call individually voir dire. They'll be individually questioned on their answers in detail to see if their answers in writing really match up to their answers as they're speaking to the judge and to the attorneys, to actually see if they can. And there are going to be many, many, many jurors that are just going to be challenge for cause because of the reasons that you've said. They can't sit, they don't want to sit, they're really for the defendant, they're really for, you know, the victim, they're not changing their mind, they don't care what the judge says. So that's the process.
Right. And presumably hopefully people will be honest about that. How do you, you know, I think we touched on this in our last conversation, but it's still, how do you trust? I mean, if you're the attorney, either for the defense or the prosecution, how do you trust that somebody, it's, you know, given the profile of this case, it's going to be almost impossible for somebody to say, no, I know nothing about this. But how do you trust that somebody is, when they say, you know, I have informed opinion, or I have, but I'm certainly willing to hear the facts and change that opinion. How do you trust that?
Well, there are a lot of questions that go into it, so you're kind of filtering that way. You're getting an opinion of people who are, you know, have family members that are police officers, and they're so they might be more inclined to go with the police. I mean, there it's not that question in a vacuum. So you're going through a lot of different questions and follow-up questions that you're asking persons. Now, if someone wants to basically lie and be very pathological and convincing about it, there isn't any way to detect that. But most people are pretty much saying what they feel. I mean, if they have strong feelings one way or the other in a case, they pretty much express them, has been my experience.
Right. I'm curious your take on George Zimmerman's brother, who has come out and blasted the media, which seems kind of ironic to me in that it, from where I'm standing, it seems like the Zimmerman family has been trying to manipulate the media, trying to use the media.
That's the most interesting thing I read today was his brother, Robert Zimmerman, is saying that he doesn't think his brother can, A, get a fair trial, and that if that were, and that it is a whole political hatch act against them. And that is so interesting because it is really a conservative Republican governor that appointed a conservative prosecutor to evaluate the case back in the beginning. So if there was going to be any political shenanigans, it would have been against Trayvon Martin, not the other way around.
Right, as has happened, by the way, in a lot of cases.
Exactly, exactly. Because the independent special prosecutor's office, that's the problem with them. They're appointed by the governor of the state, and therefore that kind of makes it be political because they're a political appointment.
Right. And Florida seems to be very fond of their stand your ground defense, particularly when it's a white defendant and a black victim.
Exactly. So the reason that they're saying it's political is just so bizarre, and the fact that they're, you know, the brother is saying he doesn't believe his brother George can get a fair trial is ludicrous, because at no one point in time did the defense ever raise the issue of changing venue.
Right.
They like the venue.
Right. So the venue being this court in this town?
Exactly.
And that venue is?
It's in Sanford, Florida. I'm not sure what the county is off the top of my head now, but it is in Sanford, Florida, and that's where everything happens.
There it is. Okay, great. Debbie Hines, trial lawyer, former prosecutor, and legal political commentator, writes over at LegalSpeaks.com. Debbie, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, Tom. Good talking to you.
Always nice talking.
Bye-bye.
We will be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your thoughts, my comments, the news of the day, right after this. Oh, this is hysterical. I just have to share this with you. Hunter is writing about this over at the Daily Kos blog. And you know how there's been this whole Republican freak out in Virginia about somebody wants to publish a list or wants a list of all the registered gun owners. I think, you know, it actually happened in like Connecticut or something. New York State. Okay. Thank you, Shano. Somebody published a list of, you know, here's the people who own, you know, registered gun. So in Virginia, they're like, oh, let's pass a law making it illegal to release that information. Turns out in the past year or two, there's only been one group that has submitted a Freedom of Information Act asking for a list of all the registered gun owners in the state of Virginia. Now, you would think, of course, that would be the nasty guys of the Obama administration who are going to bring the black helicopters to land in the front yard of all the gun owners and confiscate their guns. But not so much. No. Hunter said it just so elegantly. You know, it's the secret Obama United Nations black helicopter having army that is coming any day now to take all those guns. Just you wait. All right. It turns out that the request was made by the Virginia Republican Party. The Republican Party wants to know who all the registered gun owners are in the state. Now, you know, I mean, politically, that makes a certain amount of sense. They want to send fundraising letters to them telling them that, look out, there's people who want to know whether or not you have a gun. And, you know, probably the average Republican is not going to put two and two together. Or maybe the mailer won't say, we just did a FOIA request and discovered that you have a gun. And so we're calling to let you know that you should vote for us so that we can stop these FOIA requests to find out who has gun. Really? Meanwhile, the wage gap continues. Today, as Victoria Jones reported in our news report at the end of the last hour, 50 years ago today, the Equal Pay Act was signed by John Kennedy. It was part of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which I think goes back to the Depression. I think that was one of FDR's laws. And this was an amendment to it. And it says basically that the law says women have to be paid equal pay for equal work. 50 years ago. Well, the gap. So over at the Center for American Progress, they put this together, and Bruce Covert posted this, giving credit where credit is due. And he points out that the wage gap back in the 80s narrowed by more than 10 percentage points. But it's only closed by 1 percentage point since 2001. It used to be 60 cents on the dollar that women made for every dollar men made. And now it's in the 70-cent neighborhood. And then when they looked at, when they said, okay, let's take this argument that people like from the Independent Women's Forum, you know, they come on this program all the time and say, oh, well, you know, women are paid less because they take time off to have babies. And so when you aggregate their pay, it's lower. Or they go home and watch their kids, or, you know, like, so they took those numbers and they said, okay, let's just look at women who don't have babies and compare their pay to men who don't have babies. Let's compare single women to single men. Let's compare, you know, childless. Let's compare childless married couples to childless women. Or let's, you know, men, excuse me, let me say this again. Let's compare childless married couples, women versus men. Let's just, you know, let's compare apples to apples here. And it turns out that the Women's Independent Forum, or what IWI, the Independent Women's Forum, the conservatives, that they were right, that there was some downward skewing of women's average pay because not all women stay in the workforce their entire lives. Some of them drop out of the workforce for months or even years in order to have and or raise children. But when you filter that out, women are still only earning 80 cents on the dollar for men. When you filter out all of that other stuff, which is not all that hard to do. So then they come along and they say, oh, well, you know, the reason why is because, you know, men are, you look at the old pictures of college graduates, Yale 1955, it's all men. Women are not as well educated as men, therefore women make less money. So they said, okay, well, let's just compare women to men who have the same degrees and are doing the same job. So you got a woman with a bachelor's degree in biology, and you got a man with a bachelor's degree in biology, and they're both working as biologists. How much do they make? Or PhD teachers, or, you know, trade school graduates, or whatever. Fresh out of college. Identical job, identical man, woman, single, take all that stuff, all the kid stuff out. Fresh out of college, same degree. Not even an age difference, women still make 7% less than men at hiring. Which is a substantial amount of money. I mean, that's $1,400 a year for a business degree, $2,600 a year for an advanced degree in science. And by the way, because in many places, in many workplaces, part of your employment contract is that you can't tell people how much you earn. Or part of the social contract is that people just don't talk about their pay. It's just, you know, something people don't do in the workplace. There's a lot of women who have no idea that their employers are paying men more for the exact same job at the exact same education level. So it's probably even worse than we know. 50 years we've had this law.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You know, John Kennedy really put this nation on a positive trajectory. I think he would be shocked if he were alive today at what we've become. Four minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting on commercial stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network and DirecTV and several hundred cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network. Welcome back. Norman Solomon, author, political activist, columnist, general all-around brilliant good guy and genuine progressive, Norman, and old friend, Norman Solomon. By the way, Norman Solomon, SOLOMON.com, the website. Norman, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, it's great to have you on the program. You've got a great piece on Common Dreams right now about how we need to not only be thanking Edward Snowden, in fact, you offered a link for how to do that, but that this could be a moment for us. You want to riff on that for a bit?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's hard to think of 5 days in the history of this country during our lifetimes where so much has been at stake and so much revealed. And really, I think Edward Snowden has given us a gift, the people of the United States and beyond. And it's up to us, Tom, you know, you, me, everybody listening, everyone who cares about civil liberties and the Bill of Rights. Will we squander this gift and just sort of see it as something to look in on and look away? Or will we use it to organize, to agitate, to take action, to use our democratic small d possibilities to really make the changes to roll back these terrible assaults by the NSA and other agencies on our First Amendment, our Fourth Amendment, our Fifth Amendment?
Yeah. And will we?
Well, it's up for grabs. I feel encouraged by the last few days, but we've got to cut against, I think, a lot of the acculturation. You know, with this blessed program and a few others as exceptions, most of the mass media just encourage us to be passive. And that's why, with my colleagues at RootsAction.org, we've put together this thank you petition. And for step one, it's not the last step, but the first, people can go to RootsAction.org and sign this petition thanking Edward Snowden for what he's done. We'll get it sent directly to him, and people can write their own comments. Beyond that, I think we need to resolve in the weeks and months and years ahead, not only to support him as he undergoes, you know, this tremendous legal and political propaganda assault from the U.S. government, but also that we transform the dialogue in our own country, because, frankly, people on Capitol Hill, and of course in the White House, with very few exceptions, they are hostile to the idea that we can reclaim our civil liberties.
Yeah, well, and I think that he's the next Bradley Manning. I mean, it's just...
Absolutely.
I so see this coming. I've been bloviating on this or commenting or whatever on a couple of different levels, and let me just run some of these by you and get your calibration and your thoughts on them as well. I have tremendous respect for your opinions and your perspective. We're talking with Norman Solomon. Number one is the fact that we have outsourced our national security. That this kid was not 29 years old. It's a kid to me, I suppose. But this young man was not working for the CIA or the NSA. He was working for Booz Allen Hamilton. And Booz Allen Hamilton... the way privatization of everything was sold to us by Ronald Reagan and all the libertarians and Republicans since then was, you know, all the wonders that will come along with it. Corporations are more efficient. Government can't do anything well. So let's hand it over to corporations. Well, it turns out, you know, as probably the most visible example, that's the private prison industry, that all they do is they suck us dry. They turn out, you know, they treat inmates like crap, pardon my phrase. They overcharge us. They underserve. And why? Because they got to make a profit. And their CEO makes a. And so Booz Allen Hamilton, you got a CEO who pulled down $3 million last year. You got, you know, executives making a lot. You got a kid with a GED making $200,000 a year, and he can hack the president of the United States, you know, voicemail. I mean, is there? I've seen virtually nothing of that meme in the media. When are we going to? In fact, my opening rant today was titled, I want my boring, predictable, consistent career bureaucrats back.
Well, you make a great point, because our entire government, to a large extent, you know, down to the post office now, the assault on the public sector involves turning this government into an outsourced corporate entity in various forms. And last night, the head of Booz Allen put out a statement trying to do at least some damage control, saying that the leaking of these documents were totally contrary to the proper conduct and values of Booz Allen that they treasure so much over there. Now, what are those conduct and values? The conduct is to do anything they can get away of to maximize their profits, and the values are along that line.
Anything legal,
well,
I would say.
Yeah, you know, maybe they're willing to even break the law if they can get away with it.
Well, that certainly happens across corporate America constantly. I mean, you know, we've seen a number of very large corporations, most notably the banksters. I mean, they're the obvious example, being indicted for and pleading guilty to crimes, actual criminal guilty pleas, and then paying fines, and nobody goes to jail. The corporation doesn't get dissolved. So, but whether Booz Allen is engaged in criminal conduct or not, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. After all, these which takes us to our second point. And that is that what they were doing and what Edward Snowden was being asked to do and the access to the information he had and what this whole PRISM thing and what this is all about, all of this was actually authorized by Congress, was it not?
Yes, it was sort of legalized, and therefore what President Obama told us and candidate Obama told us, he didn't want these agencies doing something illegal. We looked into the Rorschach of his rhetoric and said, oh, wow, he doesn't want these terrible assaults and underminings of the Bill of Rights. It turns out, evidently, that our president just wanted to legalize what is patently outrageous and contrary to really what are our civil liberties values.
Hmm. And, I mean, in 2007, do you have that clip, Shano? Of President Obama saying back, or candidate Obama saying, you know, here's what the president. No, you don't. You do.
I will provide our intelligence and law enforcement agencies with the tools they need to track and take out the terrorists without undermining our Constitution and our freedom. That means no more illegal wiretapping of American citizens. No more national security letters to spy on citizens who are not suspected of a crime. No more tracking citizens who do nothing more than protest a misguided war. No more ignoring the law when it is inconvenient. That is not who we are. And it's not what is necessary to defeat the terrorists.
To defeat the terrorists. Now, two concerns, Norman. Number one, even if you consider 9/11 and you aggregate it into a 10-year average, more people die from slipping in their bathtubs in America than die in terrorist attacks, number one. And so is this really worth, you know, taking off our clothes at the airports and getting groped and giving up our, you know, and having our phone conversations listened into and everything else and spending, you know, God only knows how much of our tax dollars on? Or should we be going after bathtubs, number one? And number two, what happened to candidate Obama?
Yeah, well, as Senator Wyden and Udall have said, it's really not proven and, in fact, highly illogical and dubious that these draconian anti-civil liberties measures, such as have been exposed in the last week, have protected us from any terrorist assault. You know, it's been police work that has protected us. And as for President Obama, you know, I got to say, I was an Obama delegate in 2008 to the Democratic National Convention. I, like many, had high hopes. But now the leadership of the Republican Party has given faith a bad name, and the leadership of the Democratic Party, beginning with the White House, has given hope a bad name. That is unacceptable, and I think we now have the measure of the president. And that measure shows that he's duplicitous, that he's contemptuous of the Bill of Rights, and we have to say that is not acceptable.
Well, and how do we do that?
Well, I think it is about organizing, and I know on your program you've had some wonderful activists day after day, and I really think we have to keep going back to that well. You know, part of that, and just at this particular moment, again, encourage people to go to rootsaction.org. You can send the thank you petition about Edward Snowden, and also a petition for the Nobel Peace Prize for Bradley Manning. But that's part of a huge mosaic where we hunker down in our communities. We speak out, we organize, we don't defer to authority. We take inspiration from Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning. We say, no, we're not going to be silent. We're going to speak out. We're going to speak up. We're going to reclaim our country for democracy.
And movement politics is where it's always been. I mean, no real change in this country has ever happened without movement politics. What is Roots Action? Tell us about rootsaction.org.
Well, we've been founded now 2 years ago by many activists. Among our first enthusiastic endorsers was Glenn Greenwald. And we are now 300,000 active members around the country who respond to our emails, who sign petitions, who speak out, who contact their members of the Congress. And we are an action arm. We're willing to challenge war. We're willing to challenge the national security state. And so, really, rootsaction.org is becoming a hub. And some days go by, more than 1,000 people have joined. So we intend to reach 500,000 and 1,000,000 and organize on the ground as well to have real progressive change.
There you go. NormanSolomon.com, rootsaction.org. Norman Solomon, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Always great talking to you. We will be back right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And anybody concerned that spying could lead to insider trading? Interesting question from Bill. You know, there's that old joke. Welcome back, by the way. There's that old joke about the, you know, the guy walks up to the fortune teller at the circus and just stands there silently. And she says, yes. And he said, what? And she said, well, what do you want? And he says, don't you know? And it's a terrible old, you know, cliche that's been played out in movies since the 19-teens. But Bill in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, has an interesting variation on that question, if I have this right here, Bill. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to think outside of the box a little bit and present the concept that, you know, I find it very odd that with this privatized spying by a group of CEOs and their employees, which are part of a revolving door of insiders, in a government where regulators have an incestuous relationship with the regulated, why is there no concern or even talk about the abuses that could exist for insider trading using these techniques?
Sure. Maybe there's no talk about it because it is happening so much. I mean, I don't mean that facetiously or as a joke. Brian Baird was the Democratic congressman from Southern Washington. And Bill, by the way, Shano tells me that you are going to receive a copy of my book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And so
thank you so much.
You're welcome. I will put you on hold as soon as we finish this conversation. And where was I going with that?
That it's, you know, it happens so often.
That
it's so commonplace, insider trading.
Oh, yes.
It's a great point.
Yeah. And well, in fact, I was telling the story of Brian Baird. That's the thread that I lost for just a second. Brian came on to my program on KPOJ on the radio station in Portland. And I mean, he represented the Vancouver, the town right across the river from us. So we threw a signal into his district, and he's no longer in Congress. In fact, I think he resigned chose not to run again, in part over this kind of thing. And he said on the air, he said, you know, I walked into a Republican, just another congressman, it turned out to be a Republican, into his office, and there were two guys doing day trading on the computer. And they were day trading based on the stock of a couple of companies who had basically business before Congress. There were bills that were going to pass or not pass that would right. give these companies big contracts or cause them to lose big contracts. And so these guys were day trading and making bets, you know, for or against, based on their insider information. And he said, so I went to the head of whatever it is, you know, the ethics group there for Congress, and said, you know, I know about this going on. I'm not sure I want to rat this guy out, but what's the deal? And the ethics guy said, oh, it's perfectly legal. There's an exemption in the insider trading laws for members of Congress and their staffs. And so then Brian started checking out other members, and what he found was that most Democrats didn't even know about this exemption, and many of the Republicans had actually, you know, like boiler rooms running in their offices where their staff people were making piles of money on the side on inside information, and arguably as part of their compensation. And he introduced legislation to put an end to it. Nancy Pelosi got behind it. It got passed by the House of Representatives in 2001, I think, maybe 2002. And it got filibustered in the Senate by the Republicans.
That figures. But you know what amazes me? Isn't insider trading the exact same thing as counterfeiting?
Yeah, that's that, you know, in a way you could make that argument.
You're just creating fake money, but it doesn't get, at least counterfeit money gets burned.
Yeah, or gets distributed through the system. Insider trading, you know, I'd say it's more like, you know, cheating at, you know, using marked cards when you're playing poker, but whatever metaphor you want to use, it is a form of cheating. Bill, thanks for
the
call.
Whoever has the most money gets the glasses that lets you see the other guy's cards.
Yeah. Wait until the Google glasses come out. Bill, hang on just a second. Danielle's going to pick you up. Bill's on line 7, Danielle, to send you a copy of my book, Screwed. By the way, brought to you by stamps.com. Okay. Diane in San Diego, California, you genuinely don't care if your personal emails are published on the internet?
Hello?
Hello. You are on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, you're welcome.
No, I don't say anything of particular interest, I don't think, to the government. I'm pretty moderate in my thinking. I am definitely slanted toward Democratic leanings, but all in all, it doesn't really bother me. I don't think they publish mine because it would really be no interest to anyone.
So at the moment, you're thinking, I'm a good citizen, so I'm not going to be the subject of any inquiry, so I don't care. What happens, though, if we get another Richard Nixon, who actually used the power and the lever of government to create an enemies list and go after people, only it's not a Richard Nixon. It's a Richard Nixon on steroids. It's a Alberto Pinochet or Augusto Pinochet. What happens if we get a president and an administration that simply decides, you know, anybody who's ever voted Democratic, we're going to do something to? Wouldn't you be concerned, Diane?
Well, that, yeah, I guess I would have to.
Okay, so don't we need to put firewalls in place now so that that never comes? And by saying, I got nothing to hide, I'm not worried about it, aren't we making it harder to prevent that kind of a future?
Well, when you put it that way, yes, the other side of the coin is.
Yeah.
Definitely something to consider.
And it's not just something to consider. It's something that has happened in dozens of countries in my lifetime and in thousands of countries throughout history. So, in that context, I it's wonderful you live an exemplary life. And thank you for the call, Diane. Thank you very much. And thanks for watching or listening on Sirius, rather. But that said, I think that even the most innocent among us, I mean, this is the Pastor Niemöller story, you know, first they came for the communists, and I was not a communist, so I did not speak up. Even the most innocent of us among us need to be speaking up. So don't forget, democracy begins, it's not a spectator sport, it requires participation. You've got to get out there. So go to free-don.org. Go to movetoamend.org. Go to freespeech.org. Check them out. And don't forget, you're the guy that starts it. Tag your
it. You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.